Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Craig, thanks for joining me at this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. We were just talking about how we just met recently and how we don't know anything about each other, but this is the perfect way to get to know you and your startup.
Yeah, no, it's so great. Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm excited. So typically I start with asking folks, you know, like your name, obviously where you're from, your current role, and where you live.
My dog is... if he's been fussy in the background. My name's Craig. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Sue, and I live in Washington Park on the south side of Chicago.
Nice. And what are your pronouns?
He, him.
Great. All right. Well, let's get started on what did you want to do when you grew up?
Yeah, I think when I was a kid, I definitely always wanted to be a founder.
Okay.
And I think the first thing that I did, like I had a ton of ideas. And the first thing that I kind of did was to find my co-founder, like to figure out the person that I wanted to work with, who I felt that was just like a good fit, person that I like being around and kind of has strengths where I have my weaknesses and so on. So I pitched lots of ideas to him before he thought one of them was good. So, I started that way. I would say one idea that I pitched to him was like the selfie stick. We were at a Bulls game right after I got my first iPhone. I was like, I think someday there's going to be this thing where you're like holding a stick and like taking a picture of yourself. And he laughed at me. He was like, no, that's never going to happen.
Wow.
But then after that, he started taking my ideas more seriously.
So from a young age, you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur. You wanted to build something.
Yeah. Yeah.
How old were you when that thought came?
I mean, I don't know. That's a great question. I think maybe part of it for me as a kid that's like led to me being here now was like as a kid, just like really my love of like homemade food. I think maybe that's jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, the entrepreneurial part, I don't know. I just liked like coming up with ideas for businesses.
Wow. Yeah, I can relate to that, actually. When I was young, I grew up in Mexico. I was born and raised there. And my dad would come visit us essentially like every summer, every December to just like kind of be with the family and then come back to work. But he would always bring us new stuff. He would always bring us like either new clothes, like new pencils, new pens, all these things for school. And I think I was in like second or third grade when I was like, this is a perfect opportunity for me to make money. I have a bunch of new pencils. I'm going to sell them for a peso each to all the kids. And, you know, by the end of the week, I'll have like 10 or 15 pesos. And then I can buy myself something new. So like, I feel like that entrepreneurial spirit was in me from a young age. And then also like my family had a mango farm. So my parents, you know, we all worked on our farm and we sold the mango boxes to like, you know, people that came in and were like shipping. And I would every now and then I would steal a couple from my mom's like cabinets and I would like try to sell them too. So that's I feel awesome. Like maybe there's I don't know if I was destined to be in sales or entrepreneurship or something, but that's a funny story that I relate to when I was young. But
I was kind of the same. I was definitely one of the kids in high school who would like buy snacks, just like a big box of snacks and like be selling them in class.
Yeah. Easiest way to make money, right? But tell me about like your startup. Tell me about your startup and how what sparked the idea, and if there was a specific moment that you were like, you know what, this is the next thing that I'm gonna work on.
Yeah. So basically the idea for Sue is well, I guess first of all, like, have you ever dreamed of having your own personal chef?
All the time.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty common, like everyone, it's a common dream. Like everyone has this dream. And are you like a DoorDash user?
Not anymore, but yes, for a very long time I was. I'm trying to save money now, so I like deleted all the apps.
right, totally. No, like it's really common. Like people are spending obscene amounts of money on DoorDash. So the idea is basically, what if I could tell you that I could connect you with your own personal chef, like Michelin star kitchen experience, who would get to know you, collaborate on a menu that you love, go grocery shopping in your favorite store, come and cook in your home, and stock the fridge with meals and do all that for like less than the price of DoorDash. Would you be interested?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So that's our pitch. And yeah, basically how it works is, are you familiar with some of these other like service-based marketplaces like Rover, Angie, or Care.com?
A little bit. Yeah. I actually use Rover for my pup. So I very familiar.
Exactly. So it's basically the same concept. So you go to our website or use our iOS app. You tell us where you're located. We show you chefs in your area. You can check out videos of the chefs, their work experience. All the chefs are background checked. You can check out their sample menus. You contact them. They reach out to you, collaborate on the menu, go grocery shopping, cook in your home. And what this allows for our customers is that they can eat their dream diet. They can eat healthy, homemade food. They can quit DoorDash. And especially for parents, they can feel great about the food that they're serving their kids. Yeah. On the chef side, what it allows for chefs is they can earn about twice as much as they were previously making in a restaurant kitchen. So chefs who are working in like the best kitchens in the world, like Michelin star kitchens, they're making like maybe $20 an hour. And on average on Sue, they're making about $39.50. So yeah, we're making this win-win for both our families, helping them eat their dream diet, and our chefs, helping them escape the restaurant grind, earn more, and live a better life.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great deal, especially for the chef as well, making a little bit more than what they're used to. But
yeah. I think what's also surprising, like, is on the customer side, like, how much would you expect this to cost?
I mean, because you're buying your groceries ahead of time before the experience, right? Like,
that's correct. Yeah, the groceries work as like a reimbursement. So the chef does the grocery shopping, they upload a receipt to the app, the customer gets charged, and then the chef gets reimbursed.
Okay. Oh god, I'm terrible at guessing, but $250 a week.
Yeah. So I mean that's really about it. Like on average, so our most popular request on the platform is for like families of four or more who want to get dinners Mondays through Thursdays. So like four servings of four different meals, 16 servings total. Yeah. And the average cost for the service is $2.75 and 34 cents.
Nice.
Which we find that's like really surprising for a lot of the families that we talk to. Like people think of personal chefs as like a super luxury service. Like, okay, I'll get a personal chef right after I get my own private jet or something, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's the feedback that we've gotten from customers is that it's like surprisingly affordable, a lot more affordable than they expected.
Yeah, I think I would guess, I would have guessed probably like $500 a week, but that being about half is definitely affordable. So how did you go about that idea, right? Like, how do you develop your MVP? Like what was the process like for like finding how you're going to do your payment structure, or like is it subscription based, or what was that thought process for you?
It goes back a long way for me and my co-founder. Like I said, I kind of found my co-founder, Justin, who I wanted to work with first. And we grew up together, like in the same town, went to different colleges. He moved to Chicago. I kind of followed him to Chicago, and we were roommates for a while. So, I think, again, part of the genesis of this idea is both my love of home cooking and Justin's love of home cooking. So when we were roommates initially in Chicago, we both loved to cook. We'd always be cooking for each other. Mm-hmm. So we both ate really well. Our friends would come over and they'd be like, this is the way that you eat? Like, you eat this way? This is great. Because our friends are kind of like I was like describing, they were addicted to DoorDash and takeout. They'd be eating takeout for dinner. They'd never be getting a home cooked meal. But I've always believed in the superiority of home cooking. Like, it's healthier, it tastes better.
Yeah.
The person cooking the food knows you. They're like making the food especially for you. It's just, it's so different. So yeah, I think from that experience, me and Justin together came up with this idea for the initial company that we launched, which was called Shmeal, which was just allowing home cooks to be able to post meals on the platform, and then their neighbors would come and pick up from them. So that was the first, that was really version one of Sue, was this the
first iteration,
this app that we launched for home cooks, where people would just come over and pick up from them. Then through that experience, we met a friend who has a personal chef agency. So the traditional model for like how personal chefs work, or how it works for the most part, is you'll find one of these personal chef agencies, or like an independent personal chef. In our case, it was an agency, very low tech. Customers come to our website, fill out a form. We get the lead, and then we would like connect them manually to one of our chefs with like a roster, like 10 chefs or something.
Yeah.
You know, just like this, let's just match this lead with this chef. So yeah, I think Sue is really a combination of those two experiences. Shmeal, like a marketplace platform connecting cooks with customers, and then this personal chef agency where we learned really about what personal chefs do, this personal chef model of weekly meal prep. The chef is coming into a family's home every week, prepping meals and stocking the fridge to really like fill a need in their life. Which I think was part of what was missing with that initial idea of Shmeal, which was like just having fun, cooking meals, meeting neighbors and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, helping people who are struggling with their diets to eat better and eat healthy homemade food. So yeah, Sue is a combination of those experiences.
Yeah. For us. And then is this, so obviously this is the second, or at least like this version two, right? Like second iteration. Yeah. So as you're building, once you started to build your first startup, like how did you prepare yourself, learn like the basics of starting a business? Like, did you have any idea or any clue how
we
to,
didn't.
You didn't.
We didn't. We were so bad at it. We were really bad at it. No, I think part of like the reason for our success was just like being okay with being bad at it. I think the important part for us, and maybe why we were ultimately successful, is that we consciously, intentionally devoted time to it. We had no idea what we were doing, no idea how to be successful, but we would make blocks of time to be like, okay, you're going to come over on Saturday. We're going to sit down for 4 hours, maybe 6 hours, and we'll just work on Shmeal.
Yeah.
We'll do that. We have no idea what we're doing. We don't know the first steps. We probably should have read some books or talked to some people. We were just like, we'll figure it out. But we know that we need to devote time to it. And we spent way too much time on things that we shouldn't have. I spent like a week making a logo, like this cute pig logo for Shmeal, which I absolutely loved. It was great. But it's such a bad use of time for a startup founder. When I made the logo for Sue, I just took whatever typeface. It's just the word Sue.
Yeah.
I spent 5 minutes on it.
Yeah.
So we weren't prepared, but I think we just kept spending time on it and learning and getting feedback. I wish we'd spent our time better. I wish we had just done like the age-old startup, but just like talk to customers. Just do customer discovery. Just like do that. But I don't know. Like maybe in this case, we were thinking of ourselves as our own customers. If I'm being generous to my past self. But no, I don't know. It was just like spending time on it consciously, figuring it out as you go.
And at what point did you kind of like look at the model and said, oh, this is actually working. Let's find some more support. Like, or did you yourselves, are you technical? Did you build the app yourselves, or how did you
Justin's
go about?
Justin's technical, yeah.
Justin, okay.
I'm not. So I think, yeah, maybe the moment when I started to think, okay, Sue is actually working. So we launched this in August of 24. And, you know, it was growing slowly. We're processing the end of last year, like, $4,000 a month, $6,000, $8,000, $9,000. And then in January, we processed about $20,000. And we started growing like, you know, 25, 30, 40. Mm-hmm. So now we're processing like $40,000 or $50,000 in transactions a month. And I think that, yeah, it was probably that moment, just like reviewing our finances at the end of January, I was like, wow, we did almost, we grew almost 100, 150% over a month. Like, I think we have something here. Like, is this what it feels like when it's working? This is really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think it's just like, I don't know. It wasn't a specific moment where it was like an epiphany that this is like clicking. It was just like consistent effort over time. And then just like looking at the numbers where I slowly started to be like, okay, maybe it's real.
Yeah.
Maybe there's really something.
So are you thinking then now as you're growing to either expand? Are you just in Chicago right now or are you in other markets too?
Right now we're in Chicago, New York, and LA.
Okay.
So those are our three initial markets. We launched in Chicago in August and we added LA and New York in September. Now we are thinking about adding more markets. And we just started recruiting chefs in Vegas, actually.
Wow. Yeah. So tell me about Sue and your team. Who's all in your team?
Yeah, so it's me. I'm the CEO and co-founder. My co-founder, Justin, who's our CTO. I grew up with him and we were initially roommates who loved cooking for each other. Mm-hmm. And our developer, Ali, who we met through the U Chicago, what was the name of this program? I forget the name of the program.
Was it Polsky?
It wasn't Polsky. Hmm. But yeah, we met our developer and co-founder, Ali, who's a student at U Chicago, incredibly talented developer who's working with us building our website.
Great. That's awesome. And obviously, as you scale, you also need to start kind of investing in yourselves and expanding the team. Do you have any plans right now of fundraising, or where are you in that journey?
We are sort of in the middle of fundraising, just like a friends and family.
Okay.
We're about halfway into like 150K rounds.
Nice.
And I just, for the first time, did a pitch competition last night.
Oh, fun. Where at?
It's my first one ever. It was at Polsky. It was a score small business competition. Not to brag, but I did get second place.
Hey, we'll take it. We'll take it. That's amazing.
Yeah. But I'm like, should I just do this? Like, it was pretty fun. And like, I got a $5,000 check. I was like, should I just do... It's great.
I mean, why not? I know Tech Rice is also happening in Chicago. There's a lot of like future of food stuff coming up this summer and this fall. So I think you'll definitely see a lot going on, especially within food and agriculture. So that might be actually your sweet spot to start going to some of those events and like connecting with founders.
Let me know if anything's on your radar.
I will when it's official. But I do have a couple of ideas for you.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then also Chicago Tech Week, you know, that's happening in like late July coming up. So there's going to be a lot of like startup opportunities for founders too. But yeah, I have a couple of ideas for you that I can't just say yet because I would get in trouble if I did. Yeah, it's a secret.
Okay, great.
It's a secret, but I will let you know off the record another time.
I'm so intrigued.
Later.
I'm super intrigued.
I know. Let me just say that I already got a ticket for you, so don't worry.
Great. Amazing. Amazing. Cool.
So as you've built now, you know, you've got almost a year, right? Like almost a year. What's one thing that you wish you'd done differently?
Great question. I mean, I do think it's that thing, which is such a cliche of like just talking to customers. And I think it's even like, I would take it a step further. And this was some advice that I got from my friend Phil, who works at Party Slate, which is another Chicago marketplace. But just try to get your customers' money as soon as possible. Don't just talk to your customers, but try to get them to pay you even before you build anything. Like, they're probably not going to pay you, but you can learn a lot, especially with like a marketplace business like this.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot of the marketplace stuff like manually. You don't need tech for it. I can just do what my personal chef agency was doing. Just like find people who want to get a chef, talk to chefs and connect them. So I wish I just did everything possible manually before building anything.
Yeah.
And having those those conversations with customers, they don't have to be tough, but just try to get their money. That's what you're trying to do as a business. So just do that.
I mean, people
and
you'll pledge.
Learn so much.
Yeah, people you'll pledge ahead so of time. Much. They're excited. So
do you say pledge?
Pledge, like they pledge money pledge. To you yeah. know to be a customer if they like the idea. Like they would be, I think they would be willing to do that for sure.
But that's in my view, that's the most effective way to talk to customers is in the context of. It, maybe this sounds bad, but trying to get their money. Like
that's what you're trying to do anyway.
I think that's the best use of time. And maybe bigger picture, it's just like your startup, you need to be extremely mindful of how you spend your time and not spend a week designing your logo. Never do that. Never do that.
Yeah.
Let it be as dirty as possible. We kind of coined a phrase when we were building our initial MVP for this, like just to go a step beyond like the minimum viable product. Like in our minds, we were thinking of it as like the DMVP, the, I don't even remember what the D stood for, like the dirty minimal dirty. Viable product, but just like make it look so bad and just like, yeah, put something out there that's really bad.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing that I would tell to my past self is like, you need to get really comfortable like being embarrassed mm-hmm. with things, and like you're gonna feel like humbled and embarrassed and maybe even ashamed, and like these are negative feelings, but those are the ones that teach you the most and where you like grow the most.
100%. And honestly, like growing a thick skin is super important, even as you are also continuing to scale. Especially when you start trying to fundraise, venture capitalists are going to come for you. They're going to come for your business. They're going to ask you all the tough questions. And you know, 98% of the time, it's going to be a no. I was actually talking to this with Jill in the last episode about how when I did the VC fellowship with Chicago Blend, and you know, we had investors come in and talk to us about like what is a day to day like for them, or what is a year like for them, and you know, they told us essentially like we talked to about 1,000 startups in 1 year, and they basically said to all of us aspiring VCs, like, be prepared to say no. Like essentially 990 times, because out of those 1,000, you only get to say 10 yeses. That just seemed like such a difficult job.
Saying no to 990 of those.
Essentially.
Your business not good
enough. Yeah. And like, that just, to me, it sounded so sad. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, I think I'd rather go work with the startups on a different capacity, maybe like in platform, maybe like as, you know, like a support system, program manager. So I actually worked at 1871 right before what I'm doing now. I was a director of startup programs there and running the early stage program instead of like going the VC route, because it just, the more and more I thought about it, that just was not appealing to me. If I were to work for a VC fund, I think it would be under a platform role for sure. And working with their portfolio companies and like in scaling and growing and like learning more from them.
Okay. And not to sound too ignorant, but what does that mean to have a platform role?
Yeah. So a platform role essentially is like not an investing role. It's every venture capital firm has their portfolio, right? They have like 50 or 40 or 30 startups that they have already invested in, but they still get to support them. You know, like they need a team that supports them with their marketing, or at least like, or finding maybe talent or just any questions that they might have that will help them grow and scale. Like that, they actually have like a head of platform that helps them with all of those startups. But the larger the firm is, they usually create a team in platform to support the founders that they already are investing in, because they obviously they want to see them succeed too. They all want a 10 times return. So that's essentially like what those platform roles are, like essentially working with the startup founders in helping them grow and scale, helping them connect them to talent and things like that. So I also didn't know about it. It's okay. I didn't know about that community until I like did the fellowship, and I'm like, oh, there's these specific roles for like helping VC firms and like startups.
Cool. You can be helpful. It's not just about saying yes or no to pitches. Yeah. You can just be there to support.
Exactly.
That sounds cool.
Sure, like the attractive part for a lot of investors and like people that want to go in VC is like obviously the carry, like the exiting a 10 times return company, right? Like becoming the next unicorn and getting a lot of revenue from that. But for me, it was more so about like, yes, that, but also getting to work with founders and learning all about like the new innovation that they're building and like seeing like the problems they're solving that, you know, that just is insane to me. So I get excited about that. And that's why I was at IT71 and then all of that happened with the Merchandise Smart. So then now I was laid off and now I'm doing a couple of other things on the side. So I have a fellowship right now actually with World Business Chicago. And continuing to interview just, you know, to seeing what's next. So, but you and I met at 1 Million Cups when you pitched Sue.
Right.
I just actually joined their team too as a volunteer. Awesome. So we're putting together all these events on Wednesdays for founders to come in and kind of share their stories, share their pitches if they want to. And not necessarily like a pitch, but at least, storytelling on what they're trying to build and how we can help. So future, what's essentially like your vision? Where do you want to be in the next 2-5 years? Like, what are you thinking for Sue?
I want it to be known as a replacement for DoorDash. I feel like most of the customers that we talk to are these families who are hooked on DoorDash and they have these bad outcomes. They feel guilty feeding this to their families. So I think our big opportunity is to help them and to become known as an alternative to delivery apps and to give hope to people that like there is a way to eat healthy, homemade, to eat the diet of their dreams. Like there's so many people who feel like stuck with their diets and like it's so hard. Like everyone's working full time.
Yeah.
No one has the time and energy to cook. Everyone wants to eat homemade. Everyone knows that home cooking is the best way to eat. Nobody has time. Everyone's overworked and tired. So yeah, to be able to provide healthy homemade food to families, especially like I'm a dad now. Like mm-hmm. I get it. I get how it feels like feeding your kids something that you like when I don't have time to make them a nice lunch and now I'm like giving them some like crackers or something mm-hmm. and like some in like a fig bar or something. Like I feel that guilt of I wish there was a better way. Like I wish I could. It's even different from like when I feed myself something that's not great. So when I talk to my customers, there's this like relief that we're able to provide, and that's the vision for it.
No, yeah, I completely agree and can relate. I feel like I have 2-year-old or 3-year-old twin boys, and they eat a lot. Like they're eating a lot now. But I try to like meal prep on Sundays for like at least the first 3 days, you know, like of the week. And I do a pretty good job at it, but there are days where I definitely don't have the time and I either just like swing by and get like cheeseburgers or something quick. I completely agree where you're coming from. So no worries. Tell me a little bit about any unique challenges. What are some of the challenges that you're learning as you go?
Yeah, I think what was surprising to us, one of the biggest challenges we faced early on was pricing, how to figure mm-hmm. out pricing for this, how pricing works. You know, the initial version that we launched was very reflective of that personal chef agency that we worked for, where we'll show you the chefs in your area, you connect with one, and then you guys figure out the pricing. It's like whatever you want to be. So that was like one of our biggest blocks early on, like in terms of the onboarding flow for new customers. They would get to this stage talking to the chef and just get completely stuck. Like the conversation would just get stuck there where they're trying to figure out the price together. So we had to learn that as a marketplace, it's on us to provide pricing structure. And we had to figure out what that was going to be. So I think once we unlock that once we provided the tools to, we started implementing a formula to suggest pricing for every service. So all the chefs now have an hourly rate. It's usually in the range of like 40, 45 bucks, something like this. Yeah. We provide an estimate for how long we expect the service to take. Maybe it's like 6 hours. And then we suggest a quote for every service. So yeah, you'll go on the site, you run a search for, let's say, 4 meals per week, 4 servings per meal. And then you instantly see different price points for different chefs based on their hourly rate. Once we started doing that, once we started providing this pricing structure, not just for the customers so that they would understand how much this is going to cost, but also for the chefs that we're working with, they're trying to leave restaurants. They're not experienced personal chefs. They're just trying this for the first time, maybe.
Yeah.
So for them also, like, providing this structure was really like a key inflection point for us. And I think also just like having this pricing front and center, it also unlocks something else, which, like I was talking about before, people's expectation for how much this costs is really high. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you would think this would cost $500, like $1,000 a week. So putting that front and center in our UI, so the customers immediately understand, like, wow, this is
affordable.
I could do this.
Yeah.
Really unlock something for us. So working through that challenge and like, just through talking to customers, like identifying where people were getting stuck was everything for us.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm excited. I need to check it out. I'll be honest, I hadn't actually heard about it until you came to 1 Million Cups to share about it. So I'll definitely have to check it out. But now, as you are growing this company, as you're building and, you know, you're scaling, what do you think is a piece of advice that somebody shared with you that has helped you the most that you want to share with others?
I think it's what I already said, like what Phil told me. Of like, don't even wait to build something. Like, yeah, just go
for it.
Just go for it. Just go try to get money from your customers. Yeah,
that's fair.
I think it's that old adage of, yeah, just talk to customers and build. But really, the talking to customers is the thing. Even if you think you're the customer for your service or product, like, Don't skip this step, because you're going to waste so much of your time.
Yeah.
And don't waste your time on anything. On a logo. Yeah, on a logo. or building something before you've had conversations.
Yeah, that's great. And then any resources that have helped you kind of like continue your journey? Have you done any either accelerators or incubators or just learning and doing like any kind of programs that help you as a founder that you recommend?
Wow. I think like what I've really enjoyed recently is 1 Million Cups. Like just go, cause I did pitch there, which was a great experience, but just like going on a regular basis and like talking to other founders, it's so like beyond getting valuable advice, I just find it to be really energizing. Like, I find it to be such a good use of time. Like, it's not just enjoyable to like learn about other people's experiences and ideas and what they're building, but I find that when I leave the next day, the next week, I just feel like energized.
Yeah.
So just like get around other founders and try to be a part of something and come to 1 Million Cups.
Yeah, creating community. That's where it's at. That's what we're trying to do. I love it. Thanks for that shout out. I mean, I didn't prompt it, I promise. Well, let's close it out. Let's tell folks where can they learn more about Sue and how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so they can try it out. They can go to sue.so. With this domain, you know, you can't get a .com. You can't get a .co. It was .so, and I was like, Notion has it. I love Notion, so it must be.
That's so awesome. Anyway. That's
awesome. I guess it's like, it stands for Somalia or something.
Interesting.
Anyway, you can go to sue.so to try it out, to search for a chef. We have some amazing chefs in Chicago.
U.S.
S-O-U-S, like, yeah. And so then, like a sous chef.
Yeah, sous chef.
.so. So Yeah, you can go there. We have a lot of amazing chefs in Chicago, chefs with Michelin star kitchen experience that are more affordable than you might think. And even if you don't want to do weekly meal prep, I do think if you are a parent and you're ordering delivery more than you would like to, that you should definitely do this.
Definitely check it out.
Even if you're not, like if you love food, if you love eating, this is awesome for a special occasion.
Yeah.
You can have one of these amazing chefs come into your home and cook for your birthday party or just Saturday night or something.
That's really awesome. Great. Yeah.
Check them out. You can watch videos of all the chefs. I know that this is a really new thing. People are a little bit used to having someone come to your home, like a nanny or a cleaning person or something, but this is new. So you can watch videos of all the chefs, get to know their personalities. They're all background checked. You can check out their work experience, see the great restaurants that they've worked at. We spend time curating, recruiting these chefs. We did work to find some really great chefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
this sounds great. I think my girlfriend actually would love this. She does. She has one of those, the vegetarian boxes, purple carrot. And I think actually anyone that orders these homemade meals or prep meals, if people just can do this instead of that, I think it would be it would probably be tastier and so much better.
That's one thing that we find is just so different. Pretty much what sets having a personal chef apart from anything else is this customization. Like you said, pretty much anything else is mass produced, and it's so different to eat something that was made for you by someone who mm-hmm. knows you, that you trust, that understands your tastes, understands, I don't know, the spice level that you like in things, the seasoning level, which ingredients you don't like. So I think that's really what sets it apart.
And then how do people connect with you?
LinkedIn is great. You can just search for Craig Silver. You can also email me, craig@sue.so.
Yeah. And I'll put that on the show notes so that people also can see and access those pretty quick. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining me. This was a blast. It was great to get to know you a little bit more and your startup, and best of luck. I'll send you those details about the future events coming up that you can participate in.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thank you so much for the invite. It was so fun chatting with you.
You too. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are @Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.